Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Ash, and it has been a little bit of a stressful week for me. We've just recently come back from our holiday, which is great. Had a fabulous time seeing family and friends, and getting back into the swing of things. Everyday life is an adjustment. So if you're having one of those weeks, just maybe take a second, take a breath, relax your shoulders, unclench your jaw. Okay, now that we've had our little moment, this week I didn't have any particular reason for picking this case, I'll be honest with you. There's also not that much out there on it. So I got a couple of sources from Medium article, some local newspapers, and some court documents, but that was kind of it. Even the Wikipedia page is pretty empty. Trying a new recording location today, so once again, may sound different. Sorry. It's a bit hard to... My lounge room has the rabbits, and there's a street right there. Then the office that we used to record in is now the baby's room. Then there's the office, but if the baby's asleep, I can't record in here because it's next to the baby's room. So we're just trial and erroring right now. So we'll see how we go. I apologize if there's any weird noises. I'm also sitting in my computer chair. And if you know anything about me, you know I have ADD, so I fidget. So let's see if it's quiet or not. Born in April of 1974 in South Korea to mother Boo Jun Kim were twin sisters Sunny and Jean Han. The girls spend the first 3 years separately. Jean lives with their father, Yun Hyo, and Sunny with their mother. The girls are moved to Southern California by their mother not long after their reunion. Boo Jun Kim suffers her own issues, a strong gambling addiction. She would work nights as a hostess and spend her days in the casino, which resulted in the girls being placed in and out of group foster homes, and when they were reunited, the home was less than welcoming for them. Jean would get the brunt of their mother's anger. Seemingly, she couldn't comfort Boo Jun Kim as well as Sunny could. Eventually, the twins were placed with their aunt and uncle in Campo, a tiny border town in Southern California. The twins eventually go to Mountain Empire High School just north of their town. Their high school careers are filled with success, good grades, and friends. They alter their looks so they can be told apart. Jean cuts her hair short and Sunny keeps hers long. The sisters are described as internally conflicted, but outwardly normal. Jean Buckman, a family friend, sees similar problems with balance in both twins. They didn't know the difference between wants and needs because half the time they didn't have what they needed, Buckman told a reporter. So their wants got out of control. Sunny and Jean could be fiercely competitive, sometimes spilling into violence. Once, at 15, they had a fight so intense it ended with Sunny stabbing Jean in the thigh. Despite their unbalanced behaviour, the girls are named co-valedictorians, and everything seems bright in their futures, despite their rocky past. Sunny is awarded a full scholarship to the University of Laverne in LA, nearly 3 hours north of their tiny town. Jean decides she isn't able to commit to a specific university degree just yet, and instead at 20, in 1994, she enlists in the US Air Force and begins training at Lackland in Texas. Very quickly, Jean realizes that this is a massive mistake. The strict and alien environment with no support network around her is just too much for her, and she panics. Worse still, she has enlisted for a minimum of 2 years. She is stuck. She also begins to feel like a failure. Her choices aren't working out like she wanted and certainly not like the successful choices Sunny has made. So Jean comes up with a plan. A lie. That will get her exactly what she wants. The Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was issued under the Clinton administration and basically it disallowed military personnel to ask about sexual orientation. So it allowed queer folks to enlist, but only if they were closeted and stayed that way. If they came out, were outed, or discovered in any way to be anything other than cisgendered and heterosexual, they were generally, meaning neutrally, discharged. This policy was active from 1993 until 2011. So Jean begins telling anyone and everyone, especially her commanding officers, that she is gay. She wants out of her enlistment, and this is the easiest way to make it happen. But the policy specifically forbids doing so to get out of military service, so Jean is met with repercussions. The Air Force can tell she's simply doing so to get out of her contract. Panicking, Jean calls Charlene Mitchell. Charlene was their neighbour in their hometown and also the food service director from their time at Mountain Empire High. Jean calls Charlene out of fear that the Air Force is going to throw her in jail because of her attempt to get out of service by abusing this don't ask, don't tell policy. Charlene manages to speak to Jean's commander, and Jean is released from her contract without consequences. Charlene would later describe the girls. They seemed to lack plain practical sense. They didn't seem to know how to cope with things. At the same time this was happening to her sister, Sunny was appearing to live the life. She has leased an expensive BMW that she uses to drive herself between classes. She's dressing in high-end designer labels and using high-end beauty products. Sunny has a boyfriend and a large group of friends. She's doing well. Jean starts working at the Barona Resort and Casino in Lakeside. They allow their employees to bet when off the clock. Jean places a bet one night while waiting for a friend and loses all of her tips to blackjack. Instead of accepting defeat and moving on, Jean goes to an ATM and withdraws $300. She bets it away. When the friend Jean is waiting for finishes her shift, Jean is more determined than ever to win all her lost money back. She blows off the friend and instead waits until her bank opens. She withdraws her entire savings account, about $4,000. Jean loses it all. 2 years pass, and in this time, Jean is falling deeper and deeper into the same addiction her mother suffered. 2 years pass, and in this time, Jean is falling deeper and deeper into the same addiction her mother suffered. Jean steals money, borrows money, passes bad checks, and maxes out credit cards. In 1996, Jean is in debt to so many people and banks to the sum of around $40,000. Jean becomes so hopelessly overwhelmed by her situation that she attempts suicide. She takes an overdose of sleeping pills washed down with alcohol, but the attempt is unsuccessful. Jean then moves on and proceeds to somehow manage to thieve $10,000 from her uncle, the one who raised Jean and Sunny when their mother couldn't and put them through high school. When the uncle realizes what Jean has done, he calls the police. Jean is found at a friend's home. She is arrested, charged, and convicted on theft and fraud. She is sentenced to only 10 days in jail, 3 years probation, and ordered to pay back everything she stole and everything she owes. Which 10 days in jail doesn't seem like much of a punishment. A few months, maybe. Then again, I don't know the timings, and she could have already spent a few months in prison waiting for trials, etc. When Jean is released, she calls her sister out of desperation. Her successful sister Sunny is her only choice, and Sunny welcomes Jean into her Orange County apartment in a quiet neighborhood. But Jean will soon find out that her identical twin isn't as successful as she appears, and that is mostly what it is. Appearances. Laverne is known to be a school where the students were affluent, to say the least, and being on a scholarship, Sunny tries her hardest to keep up appearances with her peers. She's leasing a high-end BMW, taking out loans to afford a stylized wardrobe, and eventually her friends discover that Sunny is moonlighting as an exotic dancer in Pomona, a notoriously seedy area. Sunny's relationships dissolve, some of her friends and her boyfriend, and her grades begin to slip. Eventually, Sunny loses her scholarship altogether. Sunny attempts to regain her academic glory by enrolling and resuming her degree at a community college, but she eventually drops out and begins working as a receptionist to support herself. So when Jean moves in with Sunny after her jailhouse stint, there is happiness on both sides. Sunny is happy to have her sister close by, and Jean is happy she isn't a total failure compared to her sister. But the happiness soon turns to bitterness, pettiness, and violence, just like when they were teenagers. Sunny frequently kicks Jean out of her home for not completing chores or for not doing things to Sunny's standards, but she eventually lets her back in each time. In May of 1996, Jean and Sunny get into a violent argument. A neighbour calls the police, and Jean, expecting to be carted off, is surprised when it's Sunny that's arrested. As it turns out, Sunny has an outstanding warrant. She's wanted for theft and fraud. Sunny had stolen a friend's credit card some 3 years earlier and gone on a $1,300 shopping spree. Sunny had bought high-end lingerie, designer jeans, shoes, and sunglasses with the stolen card. When arrested, Sunny tells police, "I didn't think my friend would mind. She's rich." Sunny is fined and placed on probation, but while in jail waiting to be properly sentenced, Sunny calls Jean from jail and threatens to kick her out once again. With Sunny locked up, Jean has a thought. They're twins. Identical twins. And Sunny has left her wallet with all her ID, her cards, and the BMW's keys behind. Jean was going to assume Sunny's identity. Jean withdraws cash from Sunny's account. She uses her phone card to make calls, and she drives the BMW to her ex-boyfriend's house in San Diego, where she stays for a few days. Jean goes ahead and takes the opportunity to gain some more by stealing checks from her ex, who calls the police as soon as he realizes. Sunny is soon released from jail and almost immediately presses charges against Jean for fraud. It's now Jean's turn back in jail. Her sentence is 6 months. Jean's fellow inmates quickly become aware of her obsession and seething hatred of her sister. Jean blames everything that has gone wrong on Sunny, and when she gets out, she's going to do something about it. And she's going to get out sooner than Sunny expects, because Jean is on a work program which allows her 5-hour work furloughs, and she's going to escape. And she does, although very anticlimactically. When Jean is on one of her 5-hour release stints, she simply calls a friend who picks her up and takes her to an unofficial halfway house in El Cajon, California. Which blows my mind. The work furloughs, are they just unsupervised? Anyway. The next day, Jean calls Sunny, claiming to want to collect some of her leftover belongings. Sunny responds asking how Jean even got her number and saying she had thrown out all of Jean's belongings and she didn't care about her anymore and she especially didn't want to hear from her ever again. Jean is pushed to the edge. Sunny must die. But how? Archie Bryant is a 16-year-old boy who is also spending time at the halfway house. Archie grew up with a bio dad who made him lie to social services and a stepdad who stole the money he earned selling candy in the neighborhood. Frequently, as a child, Archie would wake up with a headache from inhaling crack secondhand from his parental figures. Archie is best friends with 15-year-old Jonathan Sariath, also known as Yoshi, and the pair are almost inseparable. Archie notices a blue Mustang that he hasn't seen in the neighborhood before, and when he asks who it belongs to, he meets Jean Hahn. The two become friends. Jean is 6 years older than Archie, but doesn't have many friends of her own. One day, the two are hanging out when Archie shows Jean a scar he has in his foot. The scar was from a bullet wound. It was self-inflicted, an accident. Jean, now learning Archie has access to guns, asks the 16-year-old if he can or knows who can get her one. She can't legally because of her criminal record, and she needs it. For self-defense, of course. Archie agreed, and from a cousin of his, he acquired Jean a 2-shot Derringer pistol. Jean paid Archie $60 for it, and Archie paid his cousin $50. November 6th of 1996, Archie and Yoshi are running late for school. They ask Jean for a lift, and Jean suggests they take a road trip to Irving instead. Jean needs to get some stuff from her sister's place, and she could use some help. The boys were a little reluctant, not because of skipping school, but simply because they'd not left San Diego before. Jean offers them $100, and the boys agree. On the drive up, Jean brings up to the boys that last time she was in Irving, she was attacked by members of an Asian gang, and it's likely there might be more members hanging out around her sister's place, and she might need defending, or they might need to defend themselves. The trio arrive in Irving and go to a supermarket, where they buy duct tape, twine, gloves, and a single potato. The purchases seem odd to the boys, but Jean said, in case of gang members, and the boys trusted her. The potato, well, which... just, it trips me out. Anyway, what a sentence. The potato, while seeming an odd anomaly, is actually used when the group goes to a nature area and affixes the potato to the muzzle of the Derringer pistol. When the gun is shot into the trees from the window of the Mustang, the potato acts as an organic silencer. Jean, Archie, and Yoshi pull up to Sunny's apartment complex and wait in the carport. They watch as one of the... sorry, I can't stop thinking about the potato. I just want to know if that was a forethought or if they were just in the supermarket and she goes, that'll work. It's... sorry. Anyway, where was I? Jean, Archie, and Yoshi pull up to Sunny's apartment complex and wait in the carport. They watch as one of Sunny's roommates leaves the apartment. Jean, pretending once again to be Sunny, goes to the leasing office and attempts to get a spare key, but even with Sunny's ID, they won't release one. Jean's plan needs to change. Discussing the intrusion with her teenage passengers, Jean convinces them to pose as magazine salesmen and barge their way into the apartment. Jean reminds them of the threat of local gangsters and that they need to take the gun. The boys are uncomfortable and apprehensive. Jean is starting to lose it, reminding them that they only get the $100 if they get her stuff. Still apprehensive about the use of a gun and the threat of gang violence, the boys are less interested in the money. Jean, losing it further, begins to unravel. She asks Archie, well, what if you just kill her? Have you ever killed anyone before? Archie says no. When Jean asks Archie if he would kill her sister, he refuses. Jean turns to Yoshi and asks him. Yoshi also refuses. Jean snaps and begins violently beating the steering wheel and yelling. Scared for themselves, the boys silently decide to do what they can to keep themselves and Jean's sister Sunny safe. Archie takes out the gun in order to keep it from Jean's grasp in case she went after them. Jean took this as Archie's agreement to do what she wanted. She began to cheer with an insane glee. Archie's plan was to follow Jean's instructions, but not actually hurt anyone, hoping this would result in her leaving them all alone. Jean drove the boys to pick up the magazine for their plan, a Vogue and a Cosmo. When they returned, Jean told them exactly what to do. They were to pose as salesmen to see if Sunny was home alone. If she was, then they were to barge into the apartment with the gun, tie Sunny up with a twine and duct tape her mouth so she wouldn't be able to scream for help, and then shoot her. Archie knocks on the door to the apartment and it's answered by Helen Kim, another one of Sunny's roommates. Archie asks if she wants to purchase a magazine and Helen says no and closes the door. Archie goes back to the Mustang. Archie says it seems like Sunny is home alone. He has mistaken Helen for Jean's sister. Does she look like me? Jean asks. But Archie can't be sure. Jean demands the boys check again, but no one answers the door this time.
Then they go and get burgers.
At 3 p.m, they go back and try the magazine sales pitch again. This time, before Helen can shut the door on them again, they barge through. Archie puts the gun to Helen's temple and orders her to sit on the ground. As instructed, Yoshi ties up her hands and duct tapes her mouth. Then the pair hear another noise. They suddenly realize they have made a mistake, thinking Helen was Sunny and that she was alone. Sunny is getting out of the shower when she hears the intruders yelling and her roommate sobbing. She dials 911. Archie makes his way into the bathroom somehow and sees Sunny with her phone in her hand. He demands to know who she called. She lies and says a friend. Archie then binds Sunny and begins to wrap her whole head in duct tape. Sunny has to plead with him to leave her nose unwrapped. Helen tries to dash for the door while the boys are preoccupied with Sunny, but Archie catches her and threatens to shoot her. Archie and Yoshi move Helen and Sunny to the bathroom and make them sit in the bath, an idea they got from a TV show, and they begin looking for Jean's things. Just as Yoshi exits the apartment to get Jean and tell her it was safe for her to enter, the complex is flooded with red and blue lights and sirens. Calmly, Yoshi walks back to the car and gets in. He and Jean wait to be surrounded, but police bypass them both and head for the apartment. When a police officer approaches the vehicle, Jean fakes calm and concern, asking if there's something wrong. She identifies herself to the officer as Sunny. Archie is alone in the apartment with his two hostages. He pockets a few random or valuable-looking objects and $60 cash. When he hears the police approaching, Archie rushes to untie the women in the bathroom. He instructs them to tell police it was just a big dumb joke. Archie runs towards the front door, but it's too late. Police officers are there waiting for him. But Archie turns and runs the other way, telling officers to just shoot him because he's going to run. Archie tosses the gun in a laundry hamper and buries it under the woman's clothes. He is then tackled to the ground by police. The women were safe and Jean was furious. Instead of leaving the scene and making a getaway, Jean exits the car and follows a police officer around to the other side of the building. Sunny and Kim tell officers there were two intruders, not just one. Jean stays around the officers looking at the crime scene until they tell her to leave. Jean gets back in the car with Yoshi and they leave. Seeing Sunny and Helen exit the apartment as she drives away and heads to the border. It doesn't take long for a police officer to notice something isn't right. The woman he saw go back to the blue Mustang is eerily similar looking to the victim of the home invasion. An hour after Archie's arrest, Jean uses Sunny's ID to withdraw $5,000 from a bank in Laguna Beach. And a few hours later again, Jean pawns some belongings in exchange for gold. Jean completes a credit card application to buy or lease a 300Z sports car as Sunny, but the paperwork isn't completed in time. During the investigation, police in Irving are informed by an inmate that shared time with Jean of Jean's escape and desire to kill her sister. This information is confirmed by Archie during his interrogation. When Jean and Yoshi go to return the rented blue Mustang, they are met with officers from the San Diego Police Department. Jean is arrested and the entire time claims that she is Sunny and not Jean. Police search the Mustang and find the casing from the shot they fired in the woods through the potato. Sunny is in denial about who orchestrated the attack. She believed Jean was still incarcerated in San Diego. Police also find pine sol, which is a multi-purpose cleaner, gloves, twine, and trash bags in the Mustang. Jean really was going to kill her sister. Before the trial, Sunny tries to withdraw her statements in an attempt to get her sister off the charges, but there is just too much evidence. On the second day of the hearing, Sunny is due to take the witness stand, but before she can testify against her twin, Sunny takes 35 sleeping pills and drinks a beer, which she is allergic to. She is saved at a nearby hospital. On May 8, 1998, 1 year and 6 months after the attack on Sunny and her roommate Helen, Jean is sentenced to 26 years in prison for conspiracy to commit murder, burglary, possession of a firearm, and 2 counts of false imprisonment. Archie and Yoshi are tried as co-conspirators. Archie will serve 14 years, and Yoshi confesses and serves 4. 3 days after her verdict is announced, Jean once again tries to take her life by overdosing on Tylenol. She is rushed to a hospital and survives her attempt. It takes a few years before Jean admits to her guilt. But Sunny's life has taken a downward spiral. She is arrested off and on for prostitution. In 2017, Sunny wrote a letter to the parole board supporting Jean's release. Sunny included that she wanted Jean to be there for their mother, who was still struggling with her own addiction and now also had diabetes. Jean's parole is granted. In 2020, Boo Jun Kim, the twins' mother, is interviewed. Jean is now the golden child. She received an engineering degree and has a good job in the Bay Area. Sunny was recently arrested again for sex work in Buena Park. The two have not spoken since her letter in 2017. This episode of Dead Obsessed was researched, written, and edited by me, Ash Rose. Come and join me on Instagram at deadobsessedpodcast or write to us at deadobsessedpod@gmail.com. I'll catch you soon and stay obsessed. Mountain. Mountain. There's a T in there. Get rid of your Australian. Mountain. Valedictorians. Yeah. That doesn't sound like a real word. University. Why do Australians not pronounce the letter T? Her successful sister, Sunny, that's a fucking tongue twister. Her successful sister, Sunny, is her only choice. Jesus. Certainly. Letter fucking T. It's against Jean from services and a stepdad who stole the money he earned while selling candy in the neighborhood. Did anybody just hear my ankle crack? Sorry, I can't stop thinking about the potato. Fuck.